Matthew, the evangelist, the narrator of the story of Jesus and his disciples, tells about that day a long time ago when they went for a hike. They went for a, well, it was really an important hike, and not just anywhere. Where did they go? Caesarea Philippi. Well, the narrator is trying to tell us something. Put the map up there. I don't know if you can kind of tell, but you see where the balloon is, kind of like Google Maps, it looks like that. Well, Jesus and his bunch would usually hang around closer to the Sea of Galilee, further down south there. That was kind of home. So to hike up there, to schlep all the way up there to Caesarea Philippi, I don't know if on this one you can see the distance indicator. That's about 16 miles. How long does it take to walk 16 miles? I don't think I could. That's a long way to go. There must be some compelling reason to bring them that far away. Caesarea Philippi, what does that suggest to us? Just basically, Caesarea. Yeah, see, you're putting this together, okay. And then Philippi, the city of Philip. Philip is the son of Herod. It's the other son. You have that son of a Herod, Agrippa, and then the other son of a Herod. And we know that because he would love to put his name on their coins. He would love to put his face on their objects in the public square. Later on, Nero actually... just before he commits suicide, it becomes Neronia, and the place is now his. It's the new boss. Another picture, this is what it looks if you were to get up closer to it. Some of the scholars want to talk about ancient Caesarea Philippi, like a sort of a Las Vegas kind of a place. There's temples there. There are places of adoration. There are all manner of shrines dedicated to the gods. There are in that place monuments of stone, rocks carved into the likeness of their powers, monolithic depictions of their champions. In Jesus' time, the chief image there, the big draw, what would have brought pilgrims, what would have brought people on vacation, would have been this one. This is Pan. I think we got Pan. Do we have Pan? Oh, that's the opening. Flip that. That guy right there, which to us is kind of, a little weird, disturbing. It's the goat man. On the one hand, this idea of frolicking, of wildness and nature. On the other hand, this is the one who would have helped in battle, would have given victory in war. And so almost certainly when Jesus was there with his own disciples, that would have been the marquee. All right, now we'll go to that next one. There it is. That's the one I'm after. There's a story that's even older than the story of Pan, though. It's one that Jesus and his disciples would have known. Remember how you would hit the rock and out would gush the water? There are remnants of this idea here in this place, and so this passageway, this arch, would have been wet. Would have been wet because there were periodic eruptions of water that would come from the spring down below. This is a passage, an opening. This is a portal in the old days for Baal. Baal would come and go through this opening. And where would Baal come from? The underworld, right? This is the gate. This is the gate to Hades, or we would say the gate to hell. So why would Jesus bring his disciples to a place like this? Thanks, Chris. Why would Jesus have all of his crew march 16 miles so he could have this little conversation with them? This old place, this famous place, a place with a reputation, a place of monuments and busts, a place of primitive portraits and effigies of those heroes who would have gone before. Statues, Interesting. Statues. What do statues mean and the cultural iconography of the time? Just seems such a fitting moment for us to even lean in a little bit closer, even as there is national conversation about such things. What statues belong and which ones don't? This is where Jesus resolves to have a very important conversation with Peter, maybe with all of us, a conversation about God's identity, about God's purposes and plans and power in the world. Pan and Zeus, Philip and Nero, who really is the Son of God anyway? Jesus starts the conversation with a question. I mean, he's a rabbi after all, so it always starts that way. Who do they say that I am? And the disciples, you know, offer up some what-ifs. And then Jesus gets a little more pointed, right? And says, but who do you say that I am? And I wonder if the disciples were a little bit like, you know, kids during a children's sermon. You know, they sit up here in the front and the leader talks about this thing with feathers and a bill and kind of webbed feet, and they say, oh, it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck and it sure seems like it's a duck, but I know the answer is Jesus. You know, did the disciples feel like that? That this was a kind of a no-brainer? This is a rhetorical question, right? Jesus, who is this? And then Peter says, Messiah, you are the Son of the living God. Very interesting. And where are they again? They are in this place of effigies and shrines. They are in this place of statues and stone. Not the emperor, not the tetrarch, not the king, not these pretenders to be the ones who have claim on this title, sons of God. I wonder if at that point they stopped and said, Jesus, be careful. You're marching right up to the edge here. This is dangerous talk. People might overhear. People might accuse you of sedition or blasphemy or resistance. This, after all, is a challenge to assert this about the identity of Christ in the world. And then Matthew, just to be sure that we get it, he has which of the disciples answer Jesus' question? You don't go to sleep on me here. It's Peter. Peter is the one who answers the questions, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. What does Peter mean in Greek? Rock. Petros. Simon, son of Jonah, you see it and you get it and you have it. And then Jesus says that Peter's confession, that Peter's assertion, well, that this is the rock. This is the rock on which I will build my church, and by the way, the gates of hell will not prevail against it. You see how Jesus is master. I mean, he has all of the signs and the symbols. He is totally contextual. He is there right where they live, right in the middle of the hubbub of the tension and the politics of his moment. And he seizes it to say something about God's plan. The disciples' eyes must have gone a little bit wide. You know, did they worry that the cops were coming? We got to get out of here. They are going to arrest us for sure, they must have thought. Jesus, if you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God, well, that means we've got to rethink everything. That means we've got to rethink all of the statues, all these false gods, all these competitors to God's love and God's justice loose in the world. And I wonder if all of a sudden it dawned on them, and maybe it dawns on us, that there are consequences for those who would follow this Christ. That there are consequences for those who would say yes to this rabbi. Consequences for those who would trust in this one, in this Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of the living God. The disciples, I don't know if that morning they woke up and they knew where they were going. But all of a sudden they had marched into the lion's den. And they were now forced to take a position in their world, to stand up and be counted right there at the gates of Hades. Do we have anything to learn from them? Do we have anything to discover in their experience? Are there things in our own time that we have to say no? Claims, ideologies, cultural iconography, things that would oppose God's purposes of love and justice right here and now. Peter and John and James and I suppose Mary and Martha and all the others, they had no idea how things would turn out. They didn't know how the story would end. We've got to remember that their world was every bit as tempestuous and complicated and conflicted and dangerous as our world. Difficult choices to make in a culture squeezed by these competing claims, this contest between truths. Peter and the early church was beginning to understand the glory and the burden of choosing sides. So which side are you on? If the empire's way is all about conformity, Jesus' way seems very different than that. Now, he never called it diversity, and that word never appears in the Bible, but every page, Jesus does seem to go out of his way to deal with foreigners, with women, with the poor, with the sick, the ritually unclean. Which way is it? If the emperor's way is all about fear, how many times did Jesus say, don't be afraid, but would instead ask them to love? If the emperor's way is all about violence, Jesus seems quite able and quite courageous in the face of suffering. If the emperor's way is all about loyalty above all else, loyalty to the throne, Jesus would suggest a kind of devotion to someone else. He says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. And oh, by the way, love who? Love your neighbor as yourself. We heard from Paul's letter to the Romans this morning. I appeal to you, therefore, beloved ones, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. That old joke is that the problem with a living sacrifice, it keeps trying to crawl off the altar, you know. But what's his point? To present your bodies, your whole self, your person. We are embodied ones. We carry in us and with us this passion for God's purpose in the world. I wonder what the archaeologists eons from now, you know, they dig up places like ours. What will they see? And what will they say? What will they discover about our times? When they, generations from now, dig it all up and look at it, what will they see in our monuments and in our temples? What will they see in our stadia and public squares? Would they speculate about our values, our priorities? Would they wonder about the things that we seem to honor and affirm? Jesus said, blessed are you, Simon. My Father's helped you to see this. Blessed, favored, blessed, beloved, blessed, chosen, blessed, lucky, blessed, present with God. Blessed are you, Jim. Blessed are you, Chris. Pat, blessed are you, Bev. Blessed are you, my beloved ones. It is my Father who's helped you to see this. Now live it. Amen.